You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Richard Miller. Richard, thanks so much for being with me today.
Good to be.
So, Richard, you're in Pennsylvania now. I imagine it's a beautiful snowy scene there, or what's happening in Pennsylvania?
It's very snowy, and it's in a rural Pennsylvania, and when it snows, one tends to stay in the house for a couple of days.
Right. So tell me about what you're working on now. I mean, I know a bit about what you're doing, but tell me a little about what's happening in your studio there.
I make objects. Mostly the objects are functional objects. I find that more rewarding than making purely decorative things. I'm working with stone, mostly slate, and also with small circular mirrors. I use those mostly actually on steel matrices for the frame, for the shades.
And so let's talk about that a little bit, about these different objects and how you're working with them. I mean, to begin with, to go back a few years, how did you come to crafting stone and working with stone?
I was in New York City, and I was taking part in art shows. And I worked in materials that I could actually easily acquire, which was wood, large part, and I made things out of construction materials. And over the time, my use of the construction materials got more and more refined, where I was ended up using stone. I discovered where to get slate from the quarries and natural stone from mostly from sandbanks in upstate New York, and I began working with them.
So construction materials are one thing. I mean, I've done a lot of construction in my life, and it's one thing to work with construction materials and know how to build. But stone and slate as a material for an artist seems a little more intimidating to me. I mean, I know about slate for tiles on roofs, which is a very difficult roof to put on. And I would otherwise it would be a difficult material to work with. How did you first get
what happened was, I mean, you know, when I moved to New York, I needed some form of income, and it was in the early 70s, and lofts were being built. So one built lofts, and you end up specializing, you know. I mean, there are contractors, and I ended up doing bathrooms and foyers and things like that out of stone. I mean, I had a diamond saw, basically. That was it. Which is
so you mean tiling? You were using slate as for tiling in bathrooms or something, and learning how to lay that.
Originally, yeah. Well, actually, I actually used slate on one particular job, and I found it to be a pretty useful material. I mean, it has texture, and depending on where you get it from, it has some color. And it actually, compared with other stones you can get, it's quite workable. With carbide tools and things like that, whereas things like granite, you tend to need considerably larger and more powerful machinery.
Well, slate also comes in, I mean, it's you don't find it in blocks, right? You find it in sheets. I mean, it has that advantage.
I actually go to the quarry, actually, and they bring it out in rough chunks, weighing approximately 3 tons, and it goes into the plant there, and they actually cut that down into an approximate block. Now, slate is in stratas, rather like plywood, so there are guys who are pretty experienced. They can look at a block and they know where it is, and they'll just actually take two 3 or 4 inch wide chisels, drive it into the block, and it'll split evenly and flat across. So these blocks can be, at that point, they're 5 foot by perhaps 3 foot, and then they get cut down into more useful sizes.
And so you buy them that large 5 by 3 foot?
Well, I actually buy the things which are actually called which are the raw slates, they actually, for instance, for an 18 by 12 roofing slate, right, they will actually cut the a piece of slate down and split it so it's approximately 19 by 13 by 3/8 of an inch thick, or a quarter to 3/8 of an inch thick, depending on what slate it is. And I'll buy that, and then I'll cut it up. I mean, then in, if it stays in the plant, right, they put it on trimming machines, and you get the standard roofing slate out of it. So I get it as the chips before they make that.
And so let's talk about how you first got into. You were in New York in the 70s doing construction, trying to get by. You were working with different materials as an artist. When did you move into, maybe we should talk about the move to Pennsylvania, or if you want a transition before then, when you started
That, you know, you can't really work with saws and things in your where you're living, although I happen to live in my workshop now, actually, or at least upstairs from it. And I had a studio on Mott Street. But, you know, every 6 months or a year or so, the landlord put the rent up, you know, and it's like, and it started gaining on me, you know. I mean, it was initially when I came to New York, right, you could actually work like 4 days a month and pay your rent. And you could actually be a, you know, you could live and function in the art community on that level. 4 years later, right, you were actually having to work considerably more than that and actually assembling the money each month to pay for the studio became a bit of a drag, you know. And there was a friend of mine who was into real estate, and he actually bought some property in Pennsylvania. And he said, you should go up there. It's real cheap. So my wife and I, we looked around here, and we found this small place up here, and I moved my workshop up here.
And that was when? That was in the 80s?
In 86. And I mean, initially I would work in the city, and then I would come up here for 2 or 3 days. And over the years, right, it became 4 or 5 days, and then it became that I was living here on pretty much a full-time basis.
And in that time, you also, did you transition from you doing construction and other jobs to only selling the stoneware?
Well, what happens is that I actually, well, I was making, I actually, one of the things that I bought in New York from a flea market on Canal Street was a diamond coring machine, an old one for $75 with a 3-inch diamond core drill on it. And just because I thought it was a neat machine, and I bought it up here, and I actually went and got some glacial boulders, and I cored it out and made a vase out of it, out of a natural glacial boulder. And I actually gave one to this friend of mine as a housewarming present, and a friend of his actually was a furniture manufacturer who did the New York gift show. So he asked me if I'd like to put some vases in the gift show, you know. And I did that and got some sales. And then once you're into that, there are people say, what else do you do other than that? And I you know, I was into slate, so I made some slate picture frames, you know.
Yeah.
Started working like that. So I actually transitioned into becoming a artisan craftsperson.
And so that was almost 20 years ago, right? You've been doing that ever since then?
Yeah. And, you know, it's actually not it was quite possible at that point. There were craft shows in New York, right, like the Columbus Avenue craft show. And I could take vases and picture frames along there. And at its best, right, in a weekend, I could make $5,000.
So that was exciting,
so basically,
right? I did a
few craft shows a year, and it enabled me to sort of like get the time to make other objects and to experiment with materials and do that.
So let's talk about some of those experiments and what that's grown into in the last, in the last 2 decades. You were, as you're saying, you made lamps and frames, and then how has that grown? Because you're doing a lot of different things with slate, and you're using other materials as well. Is that correct?
You just, I mean, what it is basically, you actually learn and develop a whole bunch of techniques for shaping and texturing the stone and ways of assembling it into objects that aren't, that are actually permanently built, right? They're not cobbed together, so they look okay but fall apart when you pick them up. You learn the, I mean, I guess, basic building skills for objects with the materials you're working with. Mm. So I understand all the techniques of how you build it, and I actually own a fair number of machines that I've acquired over the years, so I can actually sort of have a vision of what I want to make out of slate or stone in my mind, and I have the equipment here now and the technical knowledge of how to make them. So the pieces that I make now are, I consider them a lot more refined than I did a few years ago.
Well, and some of them, you know, I mean, there may be frames and other work, but the frames look quite involved, and something like the menorah that you made is also quite beautiful, and that's your own, that's a very unusual design as well. So it's, and it looks like that's, you're using also metal.
Yeah, these are things I made some time ago, and I still make them actually when I need to make money, but the pieces that I work on now are, I don't think you've probably seen them because they're mostly the stuff that I actually put on the website and stuff is the more commercial stuff. But I've actually been working on things that works with asymmetry in lamps and in shades.
So let's talk about that. What does that mean?
A little more visually challenging.
Hmm. And so what are those objects? Because, yeah, they're not on your website. I haven't seen images of those.
I make lamps now. I mean, they are an object, you know, with a closed parameter of what they are. I mean, they're basically an object with a light bulb on top. But they are primarily an object. But it's a parameter that you can work in. So I've been making these. Now, lamps have traditionally been symmetrical. I mean, essentially they were a vase with a stick coming out the top with a bulb on it and a lampshade balanced in the middle. And what I've been working on recently is to actually do it. So there's a certain aspect of asymmetry in the balance of it where the base can be in three parts, four parts, and the bulb will not necessarily be centered, and the lampshade will not necessarily be centered either. So if you turn the lampshade around, it will move in a larger parameter to the lamp.
And are these things very heavy? Like, is there a lot of stone in there?
They're fairly heavy, yeah, because I've been making them, actually, out of stacked slate. I make discs out of slate and cut the edges so they're very rough. So when they're stacked up, it gives a visual effect.
And so that sounds exciting. That's what you're doing now primarily, is this kind of working with discs of slate to create shapes. And those are largely for lamps. Is there any other objects you're creating, or is that the focus of your studio?
I also play with... Some wall pieces, actually. But mostly I play just to see what effects I can get. I mean, for instance, with the mirrors, right, I've been putting the small mirrors that are actually on glass rods that come out from the wall, and they're at separate angles, and I'll paint the backs of the mirrors different colors. So if you look at it from the front or move across, right, you'll see in the mirrors at the back... reflections of the backs of the mirrors that are in front of them.
Hmm. Sounds very interesting. Yeah, yeah. I think I'm visualizing that. Yeah. I'll ask you to send.
But I mean, I haven't actually shown any of them as of yet because they've not been totally satisfactory, if you know what I mean. They don't have the element of ambiguity that I would like it to have.
And at the moment, this is all you do, right? This is, you're not doing construction down there. You're only
No, I actually have been minimizing my living expenses and doing that. I've actually been incorporating some burnt wood into them, because there's an interesting relationship between charcoal wood and slate, right? They have a similar texture, but one has more of a sheen than the other. So I've been attempting to work with them. So probably like essays in blackness.
Well, that's very interesting. That sounds very different than what you've done before. I mean, because working with burnt wood is also the material itself isn't easy to work with, I would think, right? It kind of falls apart on its own unless it's coated with something.
It's a traditional art in Japan. I forget what it's called, sui something it's called. And I actually started doing it with propane torch. You know, you just burn it, set fire to it and burn it, and it cracks up and it looks like charcoal, but it's structurally sound. They use it for the outside of temples in Japan. And I've been working with it that way. Then I recently saw a picture of how they make it in Japan, which is much more dramatic and quicker. Well, I'm going to try that. Basically, they take a something resembling a bucket, and they'll put scrap wood in there, and then they will actually put like four boards, like up to 10 feet, 12 feet long, in a square, and set the fire inside it, and wait till the flames are like 15 feet tall coming out the top, then knock it over and wet it down.
Wow, so that's
I'm looking forward to doing it, actually. I'm sure my neighbors will really like that.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like as well. Richard, before we go, I also want to ask you a little bit about your history getting into this. Of course, we're talking about all the work that you're doing now, but also you have a history, of course, producing Spanner magazine in New York City, and before that you came from England. So I know you still collaborate with your wife doing print projects, and Spanner magazine is now a kind of well-known entity that reflected New York in the 70s. Do you want to say anything a little bit about that, or how that happened? Because you came from England as a printmaker, is that correct?
Well, I went to print school, and I used to run a publishing company in England with various people I met in the art community and at print school. And we ran a publishing company called Allo's Books, which was the publishing company that Spanner came from, and we published a bunch of books as well. And when I came here, one of the things that I had in mind was to publish an American edition of Spanner, showing what was happening here, and that's what I did.
And that was very much, of course, I mean, publishing that magazine got you enmeshed in the whole art scene in New York at that time, and you were bringing people together and dealing with that. So,
New York in the early 70s was it was fairly easy to know pretty much every single person on the downtown scene. It was that small.
And are there any plans in the future to do other print projects or anything like Spanner?
Probably not like Spanner, but I mean, I have an idea for several small pamphlets. Print pamphlets, actually, that I want to do.
And can you tell me a little bit about them? Will those print pamphlets be your own work, or is that collaborative?
Vaguely, they're metamorphosing, basically. I mean, they have to do with what equipment and what money I can actually assemble to do them. I mean, I find that's one of the things that conditions their things.
Absolutely, but these pamphlets would be about your art, would be about other people's work, kind of like.
I think they would be collaborations with my wife.
I like that. Well, it's great talking to you. I want to ask you one more question before we go, which I ask everyone, but I'm just curious what your what you're reading at the moment.
Well, I just finished reading the Lanny Budd series by Upton Sinclair, which was a series of 11 books that he did, I guess, from about 1940 up to like 1953, which is like a novel set in Europe from before the First World War till after Hitler. And it basically, Lanny Budd is actually the illegitimate son of a billionaire American arms manufacturer who lives in Europe with his model mother. And he becomes an art dealer. And he becomes like an assistant to FDR and a few other powerful people. So he gets to meet Hitler and Mussolini and people like that, and deals art. And it basically ties up historical incidents that went on from the First World War on, and ties it up with intertwined life of several families. It's a remarkable series of books. One of the best things I've ever read, I think.
Richard, I want to thank you for talking to me today. I really appreciate what you're doing and your time. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.